Certainly funny in the rich man world and a poor man's world. A very good afternoon to Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin from Goldsborough Financial Services. Gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
You well?
Going very well, thank you.
Now, we've got to ask the big question before we get into financial matters. Do you use your left foot on the brake when you're driving an automatic?
Oh, Alan, I think you and I might differ on this one. I did hear you mention that you were a left foot braker. And are you a left-footed person naturally? Do you?
No.
No, okay.
No.
I think it's a matter of how you train your brain,
isn't
it?
It is, yeah. But I started driving in a manual, but then when I went over to automatics, I thought, hang on, why have I got one foot doing all the work here?
Oh, you
and one sitting there
the
doing
load.
Nothing.
Sure. Okay.
I don't use any feet at all. I've got an adaptive cruise control, and it puts the brake on automatically, and it's sensational.
Yeah, but not when you...
Yeah, round down, so you go around a roundabout, it'll brake if the car in front of you is braking.
What if you get to a red light, though, it doesn't stop automatically?
If there's a car in front of you and the car in front of you stops, your car will stop.
Oh, gee, okay, all right. Well, you're complicating the argument now, Sam. Goodness me. Sam and Lachlan are here to take your calls about financial matters. 8223 0000. We'll leave the driving issues till later. And we should say from the very beginning that the boys are here to talk... what they say shouldn't be accepted as the direct advice and acted upon. We suggest you give them a call and make an appointment and discuss your personal situation. But in general terms, we're more than happy to discuss any of your issues that you've got. So 8223 0000. The text line is 0448 08 1395. Now, gentlemen, Bill Shorten, leader of the Federal Opposition, the ALP, has put a cat among the pigeons, saying that he would like to change a few rules to do with the financial world. Here's a little bit of how he justified it.
Every dollar allocated to tidy little arrangements for people already have millions of dollars. It's a dollar that cannot be used to repair the budget. It's a dollar that cannot be used to bring Australia back to surplus and to build a better future for our children.
Now, that was him justifying, or partially justifying, what he's planning. And what he's planning on doing is clamping down on franking credits. So let's start with the very, very basics, can we? What the hell is a franking credit?
I know, and I think people somewhat understand what franking credits are, but not have a full understanding. And
I'm in that category.
Yeah, sure, and I think a lot of people are. A franking credit is just a tool that the government has introduced many years ago, back in, I think, 1987, to stop people from having to pay tax twice on dividends from shares. Mm-hmm. So if you own a piece of the company's got to pay company tax, and these days it pays it at 30% typically. Should you have to pay your own tax rate on top of the 30%, or should you only pay your personal tax rate? And the franking credit system basically means that you don't have to pay the tax twice, you just pay your personal tax rate.
Your personal tax. So you don't have to pay the 30% that the company's already paid.
Yeah. But it's the way that it's quite a clever little tool to help people only pay tax once on dividends. That's all the franking credit is.
So as simple as that. So what is Mr. Shorten planning on doing then?
Well, what he's saying is, in that little grab that you played, is probably fair enough. If you've got millions and millions of dollars, then you probably shouldn't be entitled to that rebate if you're in a zero-tax environment. And I think that's where this is getting clouded, is you're combining superannuation rules as well as the input or the franking credit input rules.
So he's saying that this is aimed at the top end of town. You're super rich and you deserve to, you know, lose that little loophole that you can use to get a good deal. But in fact, it's coming out in the press today as people drill down into this, that it can actually affect people who are on as little as $18,000, $19,000. Pensioners,
it can affect
words.
Anyone that holds shares and receives a dividend, and that includes a lot of self-funded retirees. Yeah. So when the franking credit system was introduced, it was really just a way that people could offset tax that they would otherwise be paying. There was no way that you could get the unused franking credits back as a tax refund. That wasn't until about 2001 that was introduced. And all of a sudden, people that were not paying any tax, maybe they were a self-funded retiree, and they're below the tax-free threshold, they could get all of a sudden their tax, those franking credits back as a tax credit from the tax office every year by filling out a pretty simple form each and every year. And a lot of people around the country have been doing that every year, getting $50 back, $100 back, $1,000 back, whatever their entitlement is. And that's been fair enough. That's been the case for quite a long time now.
So, Sam, will this really only then affect the top end of town, which is Shorten's argument?
No. So the problem is it's complicated to segregate the top end of town out. And going back to Lachlan's example, when it was first introduced, if a company earned $100 and paid tax, and then the shareholder received the dividend, they would then pay tax, and they'd only end up with $22 out of the $100 that was originally earned. That's not fair, so they brought in the rule to stop double taxation. But then, along the way, in 2007, the Costello as treasurer introduced zero tax inside superannuation, zero tax when you withdraw income from superannuation. And it was a lot more generous back then. You could contribute a lot more money into superannuation than you can now. So you did have people with millions of dollars sitting inside a zero tax environment and drawing down, potentially they could draw down millions of dollars out of that environment without any of it being taxed at all. And then they could even have shares in their own name, earning fully franked dividends and collecting the rebate on the shares outside of super as well.
So just to clarify, the franking credits apply to dividends paid on Australian shares only.
Yes.
And that includes, in particular, the big banks. They're very well known for paying good, strong dividends, fully franked.
Yep.
That works well. And we've also got to think about who in society pays no tax. In particular, self-funded retirees. And retirees generally are often in a position where they're paying no tax. Other entities that pay no tax, charities and non-for-profit organisations, if they have a pool of money that they have invested in order to produce income for their charitable purposes, that's an entity that pays no tax. And an account-based pension, so your super fund when it's in retirement phase, is an entity that pays no tax. So all of those different entities stand from benefiting from the current arrangement, which is that refund of franking credit.
So if I'm in that category then, and I'm just living, I've retired, I'm living off my superannuation, I'm going to be affected. I'm going to be caught up with this.
Almost certainly, if you have any money invested at all through a super fund, through an account-based pension that has exposure to Australian shares, which is almost every super fund in the country, you will be disadvantaged if they take away the refund of franking credit rule.
And for example, even if I'm just not relying just on my superannuation or my pension or whatever, I don't know the exact numbers, but let's use Telstra as an example. How many shareholders would there be out there? Mum and dad shareholders and pensioners bought a Telstra share package when they first came out, and they're still sitting there ticking away. I'm going to lose the benefit of that investment, aren't I?
You're not going to lose the dividend. You'll still get your dividend and you'll still get any potential growth on the shares themselves. What you'll lose is the tax credit that goes along with the dividend. And there are a lot of people that are retired that might have most of their income coming from either age pension or an account-based pension through their super fund or a combination of both. But yet they might also have a small shareholding, like your Telstra shares, because that's quite a commonly held stock. And a lot of people have held them since, you know, right back in 1999 and the second instalment or before that. So people have been taking advantage of that refund of franking credits for their small shareholding that they have sitting off to the side. It's not their main source of income, but they are getting a benefit from that.
If you think about a third of shareholders are retail mum and dad holders of shares, and then another third are the institutional players as well, that's the super funds that we're talking about, that have managed funds or managed investment schemes outside of super that have managed funds that are buying and holding shares. And then roughly a third are from overseas. Overseas investors don't get access to franking credits.
Now, this might be a really, really naive question on my behalf, though. If I've got a self-managed super fund as opposed to one that I just, you know, someone else takes care of it for me. Am I going to be affected more or less or the same?
Well, Lockie and I were debating this. I was of the opinion, it's getting really detailed, that say an industry fund member would be better off if the rule was introduced than someone in a self-managed super fund, which typically buys and holds a set of shares that are trying to achieve the highest possible dividend and also franking credits. Whereas inside an institutional fund or an industry-type fund, they're trading all of the time and there might be some capital gains tax that they're offsetting.
Oh, okay, because they're turning over more.
But that's only in the super phase of superannuation money, not the pension funds.
On average, self-managed super investors have a higher exposure to Australian shares, but that's not necessarily because they're in a self-managed super fund. It's just the choices that have been made by those people.
Okay, is there a difference between the union-run super funds and the other commercially-run super funds?
No, the same tax rate applies to all of them, while it's in accumulation phase, super funds typically pay 15% tax on their earnings, and when people shift into the retirement phase or the pension phase, they pay no tax on their earnings, and that's when they get those big rebates back from the tax office.
So right. In saying that, the rules are the same, but typically speaking, people leave the industry funds to move into self-managed funds to get control over it and to access those franking credits through direct shares that they buy and hold. So there is a political argument that it would be advantageous to industry funds.
Well, I think the whole thing's a political argument. Yeah, well, that's difficult to discuss without getting too heavy into the politics of it.
Yeah.
But what I would say is that to those people that do have a small shareholding that might be retired and not paying any tax, they're not working, so they don't feel like they need to fill out a tax return, don't forget that you can claim back those franking credits from your Telstra shares or your Commonwealth Bank shares or your AMP shares. If you've got a small shareholding that's paying a dividend and that dividend's got some franking credits attached, you can claim them back now. And remember that this is a proposal by the opposition, and it's interesting to talk about, but as the rules stand at the moment, you can claim back those franking credits, and you should be doing it each and every year. If you're not sure how to do it, you can just get onto the ATO website, and there's a whole page that explains the various ways in which you can claim back those franking credits, including doing it over the phone directly with the ATO.
We've got Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin with us from Goldsborough Financial Services. So we're talking about franking credits, which are a very important part of our investment system, and suggested changes that are coming from the federal leader of the ALP, Bill Shorten. When we're talking about these credits, Lachlan, you said some people might have a little portfolio of shares that they don't worry about. They just leave rotting away in the dusty corner of the closet.
Sure.
Can I then go and declare or claim those franking credits back for years gone by, or do I have to be just 12 months away?
If you've got the records for your dividends and you can see that there's been franking credits attached to those dividends, you can claim them all the way back to, I think, 2001, which is really going back quite a long way.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be going back through your records and claiming those unused franking credits. Even if it's a small amount each year, it certainly will add up over the course of 5 or even 10 years if you're prepared to go back that far.
Sam, do many people sort of sit there and ignore the portfolio and just let it tick away, like I'm suggesting?
In terms of
that sort of
trading
stuff,
or claiming franking credits?
Both.
Both?
Both.
Generally, if people have got direct shares and they manage them themselves, they just sit on them, but they would claim the franking credit. Normally, they would have an accountant. If there was a significant portfolio, we help clients fill out the claim form for the franking credits, and you can go back, like Lachlan said, and do it for previous years. And just because there's been this announcement, I would suspect that previous year's ability to claim those franking credits would be grandfathered. They're not going to change the rule if Labor get in and stop people going back and retrospectively claiming.
It's interesting too, isn't it? Since Bill Shorten made this this first speech about the proposed changes, he has suggested there might be more to come in coming weeks. So
well,
it might be a
right.
case that the trickle-down effect is starting to get through and more people are being affected than the top 2%.
You can't take these type of changes in isolation. It's got to be an overall change to the overall taxation system. People running around saying that we're the only country in the world that pays a credit for franking of dividends. But, you know, they'll have different taxation systems, so you can't compare. It's got to fit in. It's one piece of the puzzle.
Am I right in assuming the majority of people that will be affected by this are the baby boomers?
Yeah, sure.
Given that I'm the only one in the room, gentlemen, so give me some good advice on this one.
well, that's the demographic of people that are most likely to be entering into retirement now and planning their retirement. And for most of the people that I meet with that are planning their retirement right now, they are planning a tax-free retirement because we can use superannuation, we can use superannuation income streams like account-based pensions to produce tax-free income. So most of the people that we meet with that are planning their retirement will plan on being tax-free. And it might be that they've got some shares that they own directly or they hold shares through their super fund. Mm-hmm. All the rules around dividends and the imputation credits and how that all works, that affects everyone. Mm. Not just the top end of town, not just the bottom end of town. It does affect everyone.
Which is perfectly legitimate that 75% of the benefits go to the top 10% of households, which is typically baby boomers, but that's just the stage of life that they're in.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm paying down debt, I'm not accumulating shares. It's just the order of things.
Hey, I wanted to just mention about the 45-day rule.
Yeah.
If you're going to buy shares and you buy them a couple of days before they're about to pay a dividend, you don't qualify for those franking credits. You've got to hold those shares for 45 days before you then qualify to receive the dividend and the franking credits on top. And that's just to stop people from buying the shares just before the dividend's paid, milking them for the franking credits, and then selling them afterwards.
Selling them off.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So Aussie investors get a pretty good deal because we get the benefit of the franking credits compared with overseas investors that don't get the benefits of the franking credits.
Mm.
And I think this has a lot to do with the way that Australian shares have become over the years, and that is generally Australian shares pay a better dividend than what, say, the shares do in the US, which deliver most of their returns in the form of growth because they reinvest the profits back into the company rather than paying it out as a cash dividend to the shareholders.
Go on, Sam.
Oh, that could be a strength to our market. It stops boards and directors just splashing money around their company trying to grow just for the sake of it for tax purposes. And on the flip side to that, there's low inflation in Australia at the moment, and it could be, you know, a good thing that boards and companies start spending and increasing productivity and growth and spending money on wages as opposed to paying it out in dividends. But that's a decision for them.
Lachlan, you were saying, people are planning now, a lot of your clients are planning now, and it makes perfect sense. The baby boomers are coming in and, trying to figure out, well, when can I actually retire? I put myself in that category.
Sure.
But I won't be in many times soon. Don't worry. What minimum, I mean, I know this is a $64 million question, but what minimum superannuation should I have before I even start considering?
So there's probably a couple of different categories of retirees, and we can say that self-funded retirees might be one, people that the age pension's not going to feature in their retirement plans because their assets are too high or their income's too high. And then we've got everyone else that will either be on a full age pension and supplementing that with some extra income from their own investments, or on a part age pension because their assets fall between the lower and the upper thresholds that are allowed for the age pension. Certainly, if you're going to plan on having some income from the age pension, you've really got to work out, well, how much is that? And then how much am I going to draw down from my own investments? And just find out where that balance is.
So you find out what the pension is and then work backwards from
there. Yeah, because it's really important to know whether you will qualify for any kind of pension. And that needs to be factored in any kind of long-term projections. I'll give you an example. If you were a self-funded retiree and you had $600,000, invested in shares, Australian shares, dividend-paying shares, and those shares were probably bank shares, and let's say they were paying you a 5% dividend. Okay, $600,000, 5% dividend, that's $30,000 a year of income. If that's your only source of income, you'd be, on your own, that's a reasonable income, but it's not all that much.
Yeah, it's not much. Mm.
You'd be really happy if you got back an extra $6,000 a year from the government as a franking credit rebate.
Right.
Yep. That's going to be a really helpful contribution to your overall income. Now, if the government takes that away, you're going to get something like about an 18% drop in your overall income as a result of the government taking that refund of franking credit away. And if I was in that situation, that would scare me.
Mm.
That would really
scare me.
That's
a big blow.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
If that $600,000 was invested in an allocated pension, and there's plenty of people out there where that is the case, then the loss of the refund of franking credits could affect me by up to 30%. That's going to drop my income
30%.
By 30%, because 30% of my income could be from a refund of franking credits. That's an extreme example.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're a self-funded retiree and you're looking at a 30% income drop, that would scare me.
Yeah, big time, huge. Angela has called in, 8223-0000 from Greenwith. Hi, Angela.
Hello. I just have a question. If there's a cost-effective way of opening a super account as a result of a divorce and I have to get half my ex-husband's super, and of course I just want to draw that in and put it into my savings, so it'd be like a temporary one. Is that possible?
Sure. Most superannuation funds will have a cash investment option, which sounds like that would be the go for you. By cash investment option, I mean you're not going to tick the box that says give me a growth fund or a balance fund where the money's only going to be in there for a short period of time and you certainly wouldn't want it to go down in that short space of time. So if it's only just going to be the cash investment option, it could be just about with any superannuation fund, because if you're going directly to the superannuation fund, typically they're not going to charge you a fee to go in, and typically they're not going to charge you a fee to come out. Now, you would need to check with the individual super fund that you're looking at, but most would have a no fees in, no fees out type investment option. So just about any super fund could do it. There might be sort of one reason why one super fund might be a little bit better than the other, but most super funds would be able to do that for you.
Right, okay, so if I go with my Exus super fund, they wouldn't charge me fees, is that correct?
I can't say for sure without sort of exploring the actual fund itself, but that would often be the case. But don't be afraid to get financial advice on that, because it sounds like you've made up your mind as to what your strategy would be, but there might be one reason or another that there might be a more appropriate strategy out there. Maybe leaving it in super could be an option for you or something like that. So don't be afraid to talk with someone about your situation and get the advice you need.
And do you do that?
That's what we do. So we're financial planners. So you want to be speaking with a licensed financial advisor.
Okay,
you got a pen, Angela? I'll give you the phone number right now to contact the boys at Goldsborough Financial Services. You'll find them at 120 Greenhill Road in Unley, and the phone number is 8378 4000, 8378 4000, and the website is goldsborough.com.au.
That's right.
Thumbs up. Thanks, guys. A really interesting conversation. It's one I think we'll probably repeat.
Terrific.
In the not too distant future, I reckon.
I hope it all made sense. It's a difficult topic.
Yeah. But the message is, don't panic just yet, but also if you've got some franking credits to claim,
get onto it.
Do the paperwork.
Right now.
Get onto it. In fact, you said you can do it over the phone.
It's a lot quicker over the phone. They pay it
directly with the tax office.
They do it there and then, do they?
Oh, within days instead of weeks.
Wow, fantastic. All right. Well, do that. So go to the ATO tax website, ATO website, yes, and directions
that's right, .gov.au.
Or contact these guys and they'll look after you. They can have the sleepless nights.
Please do. We're more than happy to.
Work out all that fine print. Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks, Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin from Goldsborough Financial Services.